This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom's ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your books. Gee, but the teacher don't know how mean she looks.
Oh, yeah, a little Chuck Berry for you there. You know, normally this is about the time of year where the school doors will close and the kids get out into the summer air, right? This is a strange new world. It's like we're on a different planet. But Chuck Berry, he'll always be there. We'll be able to listen to him. And we'll get back to things like that. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy and my partner, Big Ed Davis, he's with me. We thank you for joining us on this Friday, May the 29th. Wow, last Friday in the month. In a few minutes, Stan Voiger of the American Enterprise Institute is going to be with us. And we're going to talk about the pros and cons of mail-in voting. Is it as fraudulent as President Trump implies? Or does it get more citizens involved in the voting process? I mean, which is it, right? We're going to talk a little bit about it. Stay tuned for that. And Trump threatens the National Guard on Minneapolis if the mayor does not quell the riots. Does Trump have that authority? Can he do that? And does he also have the authority to regulate Twitter? We're going to talk about all this with the proprietor of the Barber Poll, Andrew Sarasi. Stay tuned for that. And Communist China trying to swallow up Hong Kong. Remember, they've got like a two-law government. Two-law government. Hong Kong has a different set of rules right now. That was the deal when Britain handed it back over to the Chinese. So, will Communist China succeed? We're going to talk about that. And in our ultimate top 10, this is book your travel now. Maybe the airports will be more accessible then. And then we're going to tell you who the top 10 most boring American states are, because we got to get to see them, right? And find out why they're so boring. So we'll tell you about that. By the way, Freedom Works, sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Just call for your appointment. You'll be talking with Nicole, 733-3773. Great haircut at a price that cannot be beat. Andrew's Master Barbershop. Also, you want to hear us again, or you didn't hear us the first time? Whatever. You can go to our website, and at your leisure, you can listen to any of our shows. Big Ed sets up all of our shows on podcast, OurFreedomWorks.com. OurFreedomWorks.com. Well, Donald Trump certainly has been putting his chin out. Has he not? In the last few days, whether it's talking about Twitter or talking about mail-in voting or talking about the riots in Minneapolis, he definitely has a showmanship way of keeping his name up front. So when it comes to Minneapolis, he is threatening the National Guard. When it comes to Twitter, he is threatening federal regulation, which we're going to talk about. So, you know, he's got a lot of things he wants to talk about or keep in front of everybody. The mail-in voting, which we're going to talk about with Stan here in just a few minutes. Is that a good thing? I mean, we have it in Florida, don't we? I've been voting by mail for some time here in Florida. I find it convenient. But I do question whether or not I can trust it, because you got to remember, once you seal, you people here in Florida know this, once you slide your little ballot into that, what do they call it, that little arm, then you slide it into the envelope, Ed, you know what I'm talking about. And then you put it in the post office box, or maybe you put it in your mailbox and raise the red, your little red flag. And then it's lost. You have no connection to it, right? Because it's going to go through several hands. That envelope is going to go through several hands before it gets to the people that actually count it. Now, it's entirely a trust thing. And here in Florida, we trust that we're getting a fair count. Right, Ed? Do we trust them?
I don't.
Well, that's what I'm asking. I think it's a very interesting question.
I have gratification and security of handing it to somebody in the open. I mean, I don't know where this thing gets mailed to. I don't know if it ever makes it. You know, because you can look online who's Republican, who's Democrat, and just toss them in the garbage. Who knows? I don't know. You know, but I wish.
That's what goes through my mind. It's been going through my mind for a long time. We have to, trust is involved in this one.
And every time you go to vote, there's always a few agendas they have on there that I have no idea. It reads like stereo instructions, and it's twisted. You know, you're approving the disapproval of this bill.
It's very hard to. It's not plain language.
It's almost like eeny, meeny, miny, mo, you know?
Remember we had that vote on whether or not people would be allowed to basically establish their own solar panels and whether or not. And remember how it was worded? And remember that the utility companies got involved in it? And you couldn't tell that the utility companies were trying to keep the power of electricity in their own hands,
yeah,
right?
The way it was worded, sure.
The way it was worded. It was very confusing. Very.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but with mail-in voting, if you go to the poll, and I'm going to bring this up with Stan, if you go to the poll and you vote, and I'm going to go back to the actual, you have a ballot in your hands. You come out of the little curtain, you open up the curtain, you come out, and there's a box. And you drop it in the box, and you know, or you, I guess, assume that that ballot stays in that precinct until it is counted.
Mm-hmm.
Then they actually, you know, and you've got both Republican and Democratic precinct workers, so they're looking over each other's shoulders. So you feel that there is a modicum of regulation of your ballot, you know, security. Of your ballot, not in a postal setting.
Mm.
However, is it the Republicans or the Democrats that should worry more about whether, or, you know, that's another question.
Probably a little of both. They're probably both cheating. Who knows?
I mean, you know, it's not 100%. No matter what, even if you take out the cheating, there are going to be mistakes made in the transmission of your ballots, all the ballots, the millions of ballots, to the right people. You know that someone's going to drop the ball somewhere. Anyway, I think it's a very interesting topic. I cannot wait to talk with Stan Voiger on this. He is the resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. He's written a piece on this, Time to Prepare for Voting by Mail. So let's take our break. When we come back, Stan Voiger.
Return the sender. Return the sender. I gave a letter to the postman. He put it in his sack. Bright and early next morning, he brought my letter back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on a Friday. Wow, May 29th already. Summer is moving along, and we're delighted to have Stan Voiger join us. He is a resident scholar at the Great American Enterprise Institute. We're going to talk about something I am really interested to talk with him about, and that is mail-in voting. Stan has written a piece, Time to Prepare for Voting by Mail. Stan, welcome.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing great. I read your piece with interest on the American Enterprise Institute's website, and you're basically, I guess, saying that this is going to be mail-in voting is going to increase. Here in Florida, Stan, as you know, mail-in voting is an option for people, and I do it, and I've done it here for quite a few years, but I'll be honest with you, I've always, in the back of my mind, I've worried about the security of my vote. I want you to maybe address this, but if you think about it, how many different hands does that envelope go through before it actually gets to the counter, you know, the one that's going to tally it?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is that no voting method we have is perfect, right? So I think that's true for in-person voting. It's true for electronic voting, right? Especially older people sometimes struggle to use, more modern machinery. It's certainly true for mail-in voting. And so I think the argument I think people should make right now is that if there is a public health crisis, and realistically there's a chance that there will be one in November, it doesn't mean that suddenly makes mail-in voting a perfect system. It just means that the advantages of mail-in voting become more important, and the disadvantages of some of the other methods become more detrimental to the functioning of the system. And so I think it should just mean that we should shift, at least in part, toward a system of mail-in voting, right? And that can mean something as simple as expanding people's eligibility for absentee voting. It doesn't have to mean, we switch all the way to the system Oregon has, where voting by mail is basically the default. I just think that we should be willing to give people the opportunity to vote the way you've been voting these past few years. And that's just not the case in every state. And even in states where it is the case, right, where everyone can request an absentee ballot, not everyone has been doing that. And, the logistics just aren't set up to deal with a sudden surge in requests, right? That's basically what we saw in Wisconsin in the primary when they had those state Supreme Court elections there. The issue wasn't that people weren't allowed to vote by mail. It's just that so many people suddenly requested absentee ballots that the system was just overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the kinds of things that, if it happens in a Wisconsin Supreme Court race, obviously, it's not ideal, but you and I, do we care really when it comes down to it? Not really, I think. It's very different when it's federal elections and especially when it's a presidential election.
Right.
And so I think we just have to make sure we avoid that. It doesn't have to be super costly. We don't have to fully federalize the election system, and, states can go back to whatever they want to afterwards if they don't think the experience was a good one. But I do think the prudent thing to do is to prepare for you know, this kind of public health emergency.
Okay. So you're talking about mail-in voting and kind of backing it in the sense that we have a pandemic going on, and therefore it will be safer and people will feel more secure if they vote by mail. And that's a very good point. Donald Trump, the president, is talking about mail-in voting as being fraudulent. He talks about it most recently regarding its implementation in California. Well, he's not going to win California anyway. I don't know that it would make any real difference there. But the concept of whether or not it's the integrity of mail-in voting is the situation right now. And is there a way, Stan, that let's say, I mean, we have 6 months between now and November for the presidential election. Maybe things will have calmed down. Maybe they will, God forbid, they get worse. But how do we ensure integrity? How do we ensure integrity? Or can we up the integrity of the mail-in ballots somehow? Is there an idea, a way?
So I think one important measure to take, and I think this is what concerns people about the procedures that California has in place, and this is not true for some of the other states that rely heavily on mail-in voting, is to restrict the number of people who can collect ballots, right? So this is what people call ballot harvesting. You can just restrict the categories of people or the number of people who can hand off a ballot for someone else, right? In California, those restrictions are very loose, right? And so you can basically go door to door and pick up people's ballots, right? And that raises concerns about who's really filling out the ballot.
Yeah, that to me is even less integrity than dropping it in your mailbox.
That's right, right? Yeah, that's right. Right. Obviously, you know, in the end, one person's fraudulent ballot harvesting is another person's effective campaigning, but yeah. I understand that concern for sure. But you can restrict that, right? You can just say, look, you have to mail in your own ballot, and other people are not allowed to do that. Other people are certainly not allowed to show up with a bag full of ballots at an election place and drop them off there. Instead, what you can do is, you know, you have to either do it yourself, or if for some sort of physical disability you can't mail in your own ballot, you can have someone else do it for you, but you know, you need a procedure for that, or that person needs to live in the same household or needs to be your caretaker, something like that, right? So I think those restrictions, you know, we can talk about.
Sure.
The second issue that I think concerns people is the situation where ballots are mailed out automatically, basically to, you know, whatever the list of registered voters is. And a lot of, obviously, people move and, you know, things like that. And so you get these ballots that have been mailed out that are arriving at addresses where the registered voter in question no longer lives, right? And so there's a variety of ways in which you can address that, right? The simplest way to address it is to not mail everyone automatically their absentee ballot, but have people request absentee ballots. So, for example, what Wisconsin has done now that they've learned their lesson, they've mailed everyone not absentee ballots, but absentee ballot application forms. A different way to do it, of course, is just to have people proactively request the absentee ballot, which is, for example, what the District of Columbia does. That's two ways around it. But, of course, the states that have implemented vote-by-mail systems have additional layers of security on top of that, right? So, if you're worried that you just moved, your ballot's going to get sent to your old address, and that means that you won't be able to vote. In Oregon, for example, you can you know cast the ballot anyway, and then electronically make sure that the other ballot is not getting counted. Right. So if someone else got a hold of your ballot and mailed it in, that is not counted. Mm-hmm. Right? So you have security measures just like you need when you have in person voting. Right. Obviously, you know there the level of security also varies. But I you know, and again, I think no system is perfect. And obviously we've seen over American history there have been major issues with in-person voting with paper ballots where people are physically stuffing the ballots, you know, that's where ballot stuffing the term comes from.
Yeah, I come from Chicago, so I kind of know what you're
well,
talking
that's
about.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, nothing is perfect, but I think what's important is that the trade-offs are just a little different now that we have this risk of the public health crisis coming back.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Stan Voiger. He is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. He's written a piece called Time to Prepare for Voting by Mail. I find this to be a fascinating topic, Stan. I think you and I could talk about it all day. Let me ask you this. I mean, I go back to, as I say, you know, going into the precinct, you know, the standing in line. And I guess it was always to me considered kind of a patriotic thing to do, you know, get up, go, show up at the precinct, sign the thing as you come in, take a ballot, wait, go behind the curtain. And it was kind of like you were doing the right thing, you know, you came out, everything, but you never thought about, at least I never thought about the integrity of my vote. I thought, you know, it's done. And I felt confident about that. But now, as I say, now you talk in your piece about Oregon and that they have, are they doing anything better than other states like Florida or any of the other states in terms of the integrity of the mail-in process?
Well, the advantage they have is that they've been using mail-in voting almost exclusively for 20 years now. I think they have good signature verification systems set up, in part because voting by mail really is the only method. I think that helps in building up your capacity. I think they do a reasonably good job at maintaining their voter registration database, those kinds of things. I think Florida does not have the best reputation when it comes to organizing elections, unfortunately.
Oh, great. Now I'm even more worried about my vote. Thanks a lot.
But it's a good illustration, in fact, of how the most traditional form of in-person voting can go wrong, too. I don't know. I'm sure I don't have to remind you of the events of the 2000 presidential election.
No.
Yeah.
But that wasn't based on mail-in voting because we didn't. I don't remember that we had.
No, that's what I'm saying. That was in-person voting, and it still went completely off the rails. Right?
Yes, it did.
The counterfactual to mail-in voting is not a perfect system, right? You know, like we're choosing between or even combining imperfect systems, and they all have their pros and cons. And when one system is clearly superior in the middle of a pandemic, then surely we should put a little more weight on that system. I think that's the basic argument. I think I think it's one hard to argue with. And I think too, Wisconsin is a nice test case where they ignored this during the primary, and they have now scrambled to mail everyone absentee ballot application forms because they realize this cannot be repeated in November.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think this mail-in voting technique is maybe a step between the old going to the polls and the upcoming everybody get on the internet and we'll vote that way? You know what I mean? I mean, is that where we're all headed?
One big advantage of mail-in voting over machine-based voting is that there is this paper record that is the ballot, right? And it's preserved as long as you don't lose ballot boxes, which hopefully doesn't happen that often. But you have the physical object, and so it facilitates recounts in a way that not all electronic voting systems do. So that's nice. I think the move to online voting, that's going to be a very heavy lift. It's very difficult, in particular because you want to maintain the secrecy of the ballot, right? So it will be very easy to develop secure online voting systems. I think if we didn't want to mask the identity of each individual voter, but if we do want to do that, then online voting just becomes a lot more difficult.
My partner Big Ed wants to ask you a question or make a comment here.
Stan, I was just wondering, do you think in the future there could be or would be some way to verify your vote is being received in a mail-in through, let's say, an email verification or confirmation or anything
Oregon has that, for example. So you can go online and you can just check if your vote is arrived, your ballot is arrived.
And is it, then can it tell you voted for so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so?
No. So there again, you have the issue with the anonymity, right? I think that's the... You know, I don't think you want to have a database that people can hack into that has names and who they voted for.
Here's
the registration there is typically done when the envelope arrives.
You know, Stan, when you send a certified mail at the post office, you get a receipt, and then you actually receive, I think in your own mailbox, don't you, you receive a receipt that it had been received. I don't know, could they do anything like that, or is that too expensive and too burdensome? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you could do it, right? That's a paper version of those online databases. I mean, it just makes it a little more expensive.
Yes.
The good thing is that a voting by mail system in general is cheaper than running an in-person system. So, for example, it was one of the drivers why Utah switched to mail voting only, just because you don't need to run all these polling stations, right? Which involve massive numbers of people. Obviously, most of them are volunteers, but not everyone. But you still need the locations. You need to set up the physical voting infrastructure. You don't need any of that. So, if you make the switch entirely, the system could be cheaper. And so you could spend money on things like that, on mailing out information, slips of some kind.
Stan, we could talk all day. I really appreciate your coming. Yeah. I really appreciate your coming on. And I hope maybe down the road we can have you on again. Maybe as we, get involved more into this whole topic. So thank you so very much.
For sure. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Stan Voiger, American Enterprise Institute. Let us take our break. Hey, Trump is threatening the National Guard in Minneapolis. He's talking about whether or not he's going to regulate Twitter. We got all kinds of things to talk about with Andrew Ceresi.
If I can hold you, then let me squeeze. My heart goes round and round. My love will tumble me down. You leave me breathless.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barbershop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting. Beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen, and I'm the host of Good Morning Clearwater. We are found right here on the Tantalk Network, 1340 AM and 106.1 FM, Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM. We will concentrate on Pinellas County and focus on Clearwater and Clearwater Beach. Weather, traffic, local and national current events, sports, trivia contests, and plenty of giveaways. We want to show the world why Clearwater Beach was voted number one beach in America. Listen up every Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM to Good Morning Clearwater.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back. And by the way, the White House is having another battle with Twitter and Trump, as the social media giant again has censored Donald Trump. They're censoring his threatening to take action against rioters in Minneapolis with the National Guard. I can't think of a better person to talk with right now about all of this than the proprietor of the only poll in this country that makes any real sense, the Barber Poll, Andrew Ceresi. Andrew, we got Donald Trump threatening to bring in the National Guard into Minneapolis. We have Donald Trump threatening to have Twitter regulated by the federal government. And we have Donald Trump
talking about how mail-in voting is largely fraudulent. And we have to worry about that. Go ahead. Where do we begin with this?
He's right on all of them.
Oh, boy. Okay.
He's right on all of them. Listen.
All right.
You loot him, we shoot him, he said. Enough is enough of this crap.
He did not.
They're burning down buildings. They're burning down buildings. They're burning down the police department, blowing up cars. What the hell do they think this is? They got a reason to do this? No.
Although he didn't say that. He didn't say, you loot them, we shoot them. He didn't say but you know what? A lot of people are thinking that, so go ahead. So, all right, yes. Does he?
Yeah, he's right. But you know what they ought to do, Paul?
What?
They need to use buckshot with rock salt in it.
Ah.
Okay?
Well, it works better in the winter.
Like the old farmers used to do.
Well, why don't... well, that idea would work great in Minneapolis in January, because after it bounces off the rioters...
It's a double thing. That's right.
It'll melt but the ice. Go ahead.
Yeah, Paul, that's what they need to do. Come on, it's enough of this crap. Now you got the Reverend Al Sharpton on his way there, okay? What do you think he's going to promote?
Well,
they're busing these people in, too. Half of them aren't even from there.
Yeah. No, I think you may be right. Al Sharpton and guys like Jesse Jackson, I think deep down are gleeful that this topic has come up. Now, you know, not to be forgotten in all of this is that a man was violently, in my opinion, with that knee by the policeman on his neck.
Well, you know, I agree with you.
I know you do.
I had no reason
absolutely
to do that.
Not. Absolutely.
But you know,
not.
With everything going on, he could be a little bit skeptical about this, too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's set up of somehow something to create more race, more diversion. You got Barr coming out with the Durham reports with all this stuff. Politics are dirty here, buddy. They're the dirtiest game in the world.
Yeah, no,
there are no referees.
So let me switch over to this Twitter situation now. And it kind of combines with what's going on in Minneapolis because Trump threatens to bring in the National Guard to stop the violence. Twitter says that but we're going to censor some of the things that the president has tweeted because it's invoking violence. So therefore,
that's right.
So let me ask you this. Twitter is a private company. It's not a governmental agency. When people go on Twitter, do they have the right to say anything that they want? And or does Twitter have the right to censor what it wants being a private company? What do you think?
Well, you know, Paul, it comes to a certain point because you got to realize Twitter, Facebook, Google, they got a monopoly. Right?
Not really. I don't see that.
You
a
don't
monopoly,
see that?
No, because each of them is a way of people expressing themselves on the Internet. So if they had a monopoly is basically one company having control of the entire industry. In fact, I can tell you that a monopoly cannot be run except at the purview of the federal government, but that's another story. But
well,
I understand what you're saying. There are several large Twitters and Facebooks and that kind of thing, and they have 90% of the market. Go ahead.
I mean, I can see, like, Facebook censors me all the time, Paul.
Do
the things that I put in. Oh, there's no question about it.
Well,
they limit who can see my sites, okay? I'm a conservative. They know I am.
Well, wait. Do they limit or do you limit who can see your sites?
They limit.
How do they limit that?
I have no idea, Paul, how they do it. But I have over 300 people in there that should be seeing my posts, and maybe 10, 15 see it. Those are the only ones that ever respond on it. I've seen them. They put me in jail. Come on.
They put you in jail?
I was in Facebook jail, yes.
Oh, I see what you mean. So you So you personally believe that Facebook and companies like that can indeed shut down?
Yes.
Okay.
No question in my mind about it.
Right.
Okay, which is wrong.
So do you think that Trump or do you think the federal government should be allowed to step in and start regulating these
Paul,
private
with
companies?
With everything that I've seen go on, okay, with Zuckerberg, with Facebook, with Google, what the CEOs are saying, they come right out and tell you they're censoring the conservatives. Okay? So, I think something's got to be done because if they're a private company, okay, they say I can't be on there. Now there's discrimination.
But, you know, a private company has the right to discriminate. You know that, right?
No, because I'm a private business, and I can guarantee you, if I told a gay man that I was going to cut his hair when he came in my barbershop, I'd have a lawsuit against him.
No, you're making a good point, but technically speaking, I mean,
Technically speaking must not matter, because that's what would happen. True. Look at the guy that baked the cake.
That means that, yes, you're right. That's because the federal government is becoming involved in free speech. I've always, as a libertarian, kind of worried about that. I would rather have you, quite frankly, say, I don't want you in my barbershop. And I don't even have to tell you why I don't want you in. Now,
well, I would like to be able to say that, but it won't happen, Paul.
But I think you should have that right as a private company.
I agree
with
you.
That's all
I'm
saying.
But it doesn't happen.
No,
if it doesn't happen to me, why should it happen to them?
Okay.
Right. I mean, what's fair is fair. They, you know, the conservatives should have the same amount of time and not be cut out.
But here's the, if I might, the kind of devil's advocate on this. If the federal government now regulates Twitter, because the president or somebody else feels that Twitter is taking sides and censoring, what is the federal government doing? I mean, they're going to be in it's their own way. Will they not be censoring Twitter? And who is it in the federal government that's making the call? What I'm saying is, this is a very slippery slope we're going down.
That's right, and it's on both sides, Paul. On both sides.
That's exactly right. That is why I will come back to this libertarian philosophy. Let anybody say anything they want. Anything.
Paul, I agree with you, but that's not the way it is.
No, it's not.
Okay, I agree with you 100%.
Right.
But it don't work that way.
Right. Well, actually, saying anything you want is coming up against I own the establishment. Therefore, I set the rules. You know,
it's, that's right. Well,
both of them have, I think, you know, legitimate.
Exactly. So, what do you do?
I don't know.
What do you do? Okay.
I would like to see maybe thousands of Twitters or something, you know. And, you know, I'll go on this one, you'll go on that one, because, you know, you like what you can say on this one and I like what I can say.
They got fact checkers, supposedly.
Well, we don't need those stinking fact checkers.
And then they got them on Facebook, and these guys are all liberal morons. They, you know, you can't use the word illegal alien because it's racist.
Right. Right. I agree with you.
It's a bunch of crap.
I agree with you.
But we're in for a big fight here, Paul. You know, this police thing is a good diversion as far as I'm concerned. Do I believe these people have a right to loot and burn buildings? Hell
no.
No. Hell no.
No, this is an excuse.
All right, then they should bring out the shotguns with the rock salt.
Okay, let me.
That's right.
Let me touch, if I might, on this other one, the mail-in voting. If you were listening to our guest prior to your coming on a little bit, what do you think? Now you've been involved in mail-in voting here. Do you vote by mail?
Yeah, well, I do. I vote by mail too, but okay. I'm like you. I always had questions. You know, can you do this? Can you do that?
Do you think?
I'm thinking no matter how we vote, Paul, there's ways to cheat.
That's true. Absolutely
no matter
true.
How. Even the old ones that we used to go on with the curtain is snapped and had the little tickers behind it. Come on, somebody could have turned those dials.
Hey, I came from Chicago. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what. So how do we do it?
That's what I'm asking you. Do you believe that we should return perhaps to like a precinct and everybody does
it? Well, and everybody have their voter ID. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But even then. Who says you can't fool with the machinery counting the votes?
Nothing is perfect, but what I'm saying is, do you think there would be more integrity if everybody went to the polls?
You know, Paul, remember when we were young, I don't know about Chicago, but in New York, when I was a kid, voting day schools were closed and everything.
Factories were closed.
Did they do that in Chicago?
No, everything was open. On the Tuesday of voting, everything was open. And the idea being, you're already out and about, you're already at work, if we close everything up, you're at home and you're lazy and you don't want to go out. Whereas if you're out and people allow you to go and vote, you go and vote before you start work, or you go and vote after.
Well, when I went to the precinct, I was there at 7 in the morning when they opened up.
Right. Right.
You know, the only reason I did the mail-in voting is that my wife and my daughter and my kids, I can
all see.
Well, I do
too. I do too.
I do that too. I put them all on the table to see how they're going to vote, but I also have my will next to them.
Oh.
And if they vote the way I don't like them to, I show them what I'm deducting from the will. It seems to work pretty good, to be honest with you.
I like it, except for one little problem. What if you got all excited and you put your will inside the voting envelope and send it to the post office?
That won't happen, buddy. All right.
Wow. And you're complaining about Facebook?
I got to keep them under control some way, you know?
Wow. I like it.
And then, why not just put a gun to their head, for crying out loud?
Oh, my goodness.
If that's what I had to do, I would do it. But the will works better. Believe me, money talks.
Andrew, you're a card. Hey, by the way, how is everything going with the business now?
You know, Paul, I'm really believing when we first opened again, it was mobbed. You saw that.
Oh, I know that.
But you know what? It's dead now.
No kidding.
It's dead. This is putting a hurting on people because I was talking to... I haven't seen this guy yet. I haven't seen that guy. Someone came in. I said, well, where's Russ been? They said, well, Russ won't come out of his house. I said, you got to be kidding me. He's the last person I would think that would have stayed in his house. He goes, oh, no. He goes, we went out on our boats this weekend, and he made us all park downwind from him so that the germs wouldn't blow on him.
Wow.
You got to be kidding me.
Well, no,
that's a shocker to me because I would have never expected this guy. So if this guy's thinking like that, I know a lot of other people are.
Do you think we should now lift as far as a barber shop or some of these other places where you know, there's a kind of one-on-one experience, do you think we should lift the you got to phone in a reservation? I mean, in other words, do you think you should be able to open up and just say, come on in? What do you think?
I think we should open up the whole economy, buddy.
Okay.
I think enough is enough. Yeah. The numbers as far as what's going on with this, you know, so far... 40,000 more died this year with this virus, I guess, than the flu last year with 60,000, you know?
Yeah, we've had 100,000 in this.
I mean, it's like I say, so many people are going to die every year, and I don't think the numbers, I don't think there's going to be no mass dropping deads here, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the people that drop dead, the average is about 87 years old or something, or 87% of them were the elderly people in nursing homes and this and that. And that happens every year, Paul.
Yeah. We're talking with the master barber, Andrew Ceresi. Andrew, this is something you're going to find interesting. With the worst of the virus lockdown seemingly over, they say that a study published by a marketing company found that the South is leading in virus recovery, that they are somehow navigating this better than other parts of the country.
Well, you know, Paul, what I've noticed is that the Republican-run states have handled this better than the Democrats.
Name a southern state that's not Republican.
Well, there probably are some, I'm quite sure. But
no,
but
they're not. That's what I'm saying.
There's no southern states. Okay, they're all
Republican. I mean, name a southern state you can think of that's not Republican. They're all Republican, are they not? Well, anyway, I mean, some of them have some...
I mean, look at the map. It'll show you.
Florida, which entered the first phase of opening early May, nearly two-thirds of the way to recovery compared to this time last year. Now, so they're looking a year ago and saying, well, they're two-thirds there, okay? Uh-huh. But some of these other states, as you well know, Andrew, and your dear former state of New York is one of them, are just suffering terribly. Now, is it something that you think... that like Ron DeSantis, our governor in Florida, a Republican, is doing right, that Cuomo, the Democratic governor in New York State, is doing wrong? What do you think?
Well, I didn't see Ron DeSantis put people with the Chinese virus in the nursing homes.
Right.
That's true. That might have been one factor there.
I think
so.
Yes, I agree with you.
Okay, mm-hmm. You don't see the state of Florida crowding people like rats in a subway, do you?
No. We don't have subways like that.
But that's what I'm saying. They don't crowd like rats in
the
subway.
No, they don't. You know,
okay, the buses here, I think we're only allowed 10 passengers on board or something at the time.
So let's be honest. New York starts with two strikes on them. They've got a large collection of people huddled together. They have an infrastructure that promotes huddling together, right? And so, they're going to have more people that are going to catch it from each other, right?
Well, their two strikes is de Blasio and Cuomo. Those are the two strikes against New York.
Yes. I think you're right about that.
The Tampa Bay Pravda was trying to do a comparison with DeSantis and Cuomo, the fact that DeSantis, I think this was in last week's edition of their rag, that he had spent $283 million on portable hospital rooms that were never used. Well, the thing is they are reusable. So if this thing ever happens again, we're ready. Cuomo demanded that the Navy ship come in, the hospitals close, and no elective surgeries, and there was nothing there, and millions were lost. And he has nothing to show for it.
Very interesting.
Right. Very interesting. So like I said, the strikes against him were their people in charge, man.
Terrible. I'm sorry, Andrew. I'm just going to say it's always a pleasure talking with you because you always bring something very interesting to the table. So we're going to do this again next week, Tuesday. So look forward to it, and you have a great weekend, my friend.
You got it, buddy. Be good.
All right. The master barber himself. Okay, let's take our final break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about communist China trying to take back Hong Kong.
Why don't you listen to me, sugar? All the cats are at the high school rockin'. Honey, get your bopping shoes before the jukebox blows the fuse. Hey, everybody hopping, everybody's bopping, bopping at the high school hop. Hey, the bopping at the high school hop. Taking at the high school hop.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge is all.
Hey, everybody, this is Pastor Marcia McAllister from Beacon of Hope Ministries. We want you to join us on Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock on this radio station for our two-hour show, talking to you about the Word of God, giving you great contemporary music, some lively chat, and just some food for thought. You'll be encouraged to know how very much God loves you and how He has a plan for your life. Join us this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock on Living the Good Life.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on Freedom Works. Thank you so very much for being with us. We are here every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Hey, by the way, Ed, are they going to be launching that capsule from,
the Cape, yes.
From the Cape.
Hopefully
tomorrow,
Saturday.
Tomorrow afternoon.
Saturday. Now, did you catch the first edition when they were getting ready to launch?
I mean, I was watching.
Did you see how futuristic everything is now? The spacesuits? I mean, they look like they were going out to dinner.
I know. And then they get into that little car.
Yeah, the Tesla.
Tesla.
Because of
Elon
Musk. It's a
different experience. Now, this is the private sector that is doing it.
And look how space is taking off. You've got Elon Musk, who's got this going on. Richard Branson, who's also trying to get in it. Imagine if they did something like that with healthcare, you know?
Very interesting. I think it would work a lot better. Yeah. So we're going to keep our eyes peeled. Real quickly, before our top 10, Hong Kong. China's parliament has approved national security legislation for Hong Kong. You remember that the British handed over Hong Kong. And the guarantee that the communist Chinese made was that for 50 years they would leave their hands off the Hong Kong government and allow the freedom that Hong Kong had gotten under British rule. Well, that is not happening. And Beijing says widespread unrest in Hong Kong, making it necessary for them to legislate new laws tackling secession, subversion, terrorism, foreign interference. It's the old excuse. The old excuse. We got all of this trouble going on there, and it's coming from the outside, probably from the U.S. Well, no. Hong Kong demonstrators have been out there protesting. Protesting, by the way, normally fairly peacefully, but protesting.
And when? When are they protesting?
What do you mean?
Daylight hours. They're not thugs in the middle of
the night.
That's
right, they're not.
See, that's the difference between a protest and a riot. Protesters are during the day where you can see them.
True.
Rioters come out at night.
Yeah. So I feel very bad about this. Even some of the people in Hong Kong, this one woman, many shocked and overwhelmed in Hong Kong, anger and helplessness. Some are actually packing, getting ready to leave, trying to get to the U.S. They sense a very ominous thing happening there. Mm. Now, remember, Communist China's got their eye on Taiwan as well, which is even more of a separation than Hong Kong. Hong Kong hangs like a little finger on mainland China. So China's really, I'll tell you what, if you want bad press, look at the way China's handling things recently, right?
With the virus and everything.
Yeah. Get a word on the drums, my boy, because we got a great top 10, and we got to go through it real quickly because we only got a couple minutes left. This is top 10 most boring states in America by area vibes. Here we go. Number 10. Maine. I wouldn't say Maine was that boring. It's
scenic.
Beautiful. It's scenic. But Maine, with 1.3 million people, apparently very boring. Number 9. Oklahoma. I used to live there as a little boy. Mm-hmm. It is pretty flat and boring, got to admit. Like Tulsa, but what's to do there? Number 8. South Dakota. Now, the only thing I can think of is Mount Rushmore. Other than that, kind of dead and cold.
I'm thinking Iowa's going to be in there somewhere.
Yeah. Number 7. Well, Nebraska's next to Iowa. Mm-hmm. All you see is corn. Right. It's a complete flyover country. Number 6. Montana. You ever been there, Ed?
No, I'd love to see it, though.
Montana, big sky country. Number 5, Arkansas. What's to do in Arkansas? Hot springs, about all I can think of.
Okay. And earthquakes.
In Arkansas?
Well, they drill oil there, don't they? They have earthquakes there. Yeah, they do.
That's Oklahoma.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But they're next. They're close to Arkansas. Right. You're
I'm
close.
In the area.
You're right.
U.S.
Number 4. Here's your beautiful Iowa.
Iowa.
Here's your Iowa. Lots of corn there.
Yeah.
It's a corny state. Number 3. Kansas.
Come on, Kansas?
Come on, it's
really
exciting in Kansas. You get Twisters.
Yeah.
And you got Kansas City.
Okay.
And I can't think of anything else. Okay, number 2. Utah. What's wrong with the Mormons? Aren't they exciting people?
Yeah.
Well, they don't play cards or dance, though, do they?
They can marry a few people, though, can't they?
Yeah.
Different wives?
I know one habit they have. We'll not talk about it. All right, Ed, what do you think? What's the most?
I'm going to go with good old boring North Dakota.
That's a good one. It's Idaho.
Idaho.
Yeah. All you got there is stinking potatoes. Although I understand it's a beautiful state.
Lots of potatoes.
We want to thank you so very much for being with us. We're going to be back on Monday on Freedom Works. Please, please, please stay safe, and we'll talk to you on Monday.